This is matter number 57437, Haley and Gellner et al. Versus Haith Judicial District. And the real party is Joe Arvelo, MD. If the parties are ready to proceed, please do so. If you wish to reserve time, please state what you wish to reserve.
Yes, Your Honor, we're ready to proceed. The panel's ready to proceed. What we'd like to do, I guess we have 15 minutes total. Yeah, what we'd like to do is I'll take 10 minutes now, and we'll reserve 5 minutes, and Mr. Haley will do the rebuttal because he is a party to this case, so he has a solid right, I think, to make argument to the court, even though in the lower court I was the attorney, and he was not an attorney in the lower court proceeding. Is that okay?
Please go.
Okay. Well, may it please the court, this is a case where the petitioners are requesting a petition for writ of mandamus be issued. I'm one of the petitioners. Mr. Haley is the other petitioner. Mr. Haley was the attorney for the, he was the guardian ad litem of the minor plaintiff, Ashley Himmel, in the medical malpractice case, which was before the district court. Ashley Himmel was a very injured child as a result of her birth. She had severe birth injuries. I was the attorney for the guardian ad litem, and we are contesting a order from the district court in this case, or a decision by the district court, where he drastically reduced and altered the distribution of the settlement proceeds in a settlement that was worked out between Mr. Haley and myself and the counsel for two of the defendants in the case, which was Dr. Orovio and Pulmonary Associates. He basically altered the settlement to such an extent that he didn't award Mr. Haley any guardian ad litem fees whatsoever, and he reduced my compensation to what would in effect be $15,279.41 in attorney's fees plus reimbursement of my out-of-pocket costs. This was a very highly charged case. There were lots of costs that were incurred. Lots of medical experts were retained. There were 20 depositions taken. I had $75,000 in outstanding costs throughout the case just for medical witnesses, medical experts, and about another $15,000 in deposition costs. So there was a lot of costs in it. The judge reduced my fees to such an extent that I was getting about $34.50 per hour because I had $443 in the case. We're asking for a petition for extraordinary writ is because we have no adequate remedy at law in this case. We're not entitled to an appeal under Rule 3A of the Nevada Rules of Appellate Procedure because I am not a party to the case. I'm an attorney for the party. And Mr. Haley, although he was a party for the case, he's bringing this appeal up personally, not in a representative capacity for Ashley Himmel. Ashley Himmel is not disputing the compromise, although her parents also supported the original distribution that we requested.
If the court, just out of the box, if the court is going to concede that the court should hear this or should consider what you're asking, why should the court grant any part of that pursuant to the rule that's implicated 41-200?
Well, because 41-200, that's the statute for compromise of minors claims. It doesn't create any, it says that the petition has to be approved by the court, but it doesn't state any standards for approving the petition.
But it also states it's highly discretionary with the court, as the court, in its discretion, deems to be in the best interest of the minor. And it appears the judge, in this case, specifically took into consideration the best interest of the minor. And judge, highly discretionary,
judge,
isn't it?
That's not what the statute says. The statute does not say he is to determine, the judge is to determine the distribution of funds in his discretion as he feels in the best interest of the minor. What it says is in NRS 41.204 is that he is to determine who the money is to be paid to after he approves the compromise to that person, whether it be the father, mother, or the guardian, who he feels it would be in the best interest of the minor in his discretion to pay that money to, so that person will open up the blocked account or the blocked investment that's required by the statute. This court, in one case, which was Maynard versus Null, stated, even though the issue wasn't what are the standards for approving a compromise of minors claim, but the court approved a compromise of minors in Essing in that case by saying if it's fair and reasonable, it should be approved. And if you look at case law from other jurisdictions, that's what they say. They say a court should approve a minor's compromise or any type of settlement agreement that's required for court approval if it's fair and reasonable. The court does not have the discretion to change the settlement. Its job is to determine if it's fair and reasonable. If it feels it's fair and reasonable, it should approve it. If it doesn't feel it's fair and reasonable, it should not approve it. And it could say to the parties, look, I don't feel this is fair and reasonable for certain reasons. Okay, I'm not going to approve it. You go back and talk some more and bring me a settlement that I can't approve. That's what a court should do.
Counsel,
that
within,
never happened
counsel,
in this case. I'm sorry, Judge.
Within this, it appears, at least on its face, that the court approved the global settlement number, and the issue is how that money is parsed out within it.
That is correct.
So is that not within the court's discretion?
No, that isn't. Can the court look at it to determine whether it's fair and reasonable? Of course it can. But any settlement that's achieved by parties in a case like this, the settlement is not only dependent upon the total figure, but how that figure is going to be dispersed. In this case, what the parties decided after their settlement conference, which, by the way, was mediated by, you know, Judge Bell, who, you know, is very experienced and a respected person who all the parties, you know, I think he was probably more responsible for getting this achieved than anybody, and he's probably the only one that could do it. He strongly supported it, and basically what the settlement was is that there was a huge Medicaid lien in this case, $513,000. They were going to pay $238,000, the defendants. What we had to do is reduce that lien, or I had to do is reduce that lien to a manageable figure, and then make sure that the minor, Ashley Kimmel, received at least $25,000 in the distribution after attorney's fees, costs, and guardianship compensation was paid. And that's what I was able to do. After that, I had to go to Medicaid and negotiate down the lien. I negotiated down the lien from the $513,000 to $79,000. After that, we had a settlement. Medicaid's approval of that lien was predicated on the figures that I gave Medicaid, that I had unreimbursed costs of approximately $38,000, which was wrong. It was more like $48,000. And then I was going to receive a fee of $58,000. I asked for a fee of $21,000. And then Mr. Haley was going to receive compensation of $24,000. And we only asked for $20,100 for him after we got all the figures and looked at it and then presented our petition to the court. And so we presented our petition to the court. And when I presented the petition to the court, it came back, petition for compromise, it came back and said, well, we can't approve this, because the amount that's being paid for attorney's fees and costs is more than the minor's getting. So what I did is I talked to the law clerk, and I filed a motion. I said, this is an extraordinary case. There's huge costs in this case. That's not reasonable. We need to have a hearing on this. The law clerk agreed. So I filed a motion to approve the petition for compromise of minor's claim. It was set for hearing on September 20th of 2010, which, by the way, was the same date the trial in this case was supposed to start. A day before the hearing was to come up, I got a call from the judge's law clerk who said, we're taking the hearing off. And I said, well, why? I'm planning on appearing at the hearing. Mr. Haley's planning on appearing at the hearing. I think the defendants are planning on appearing at the hearing. And Judge Bell was going to appear at the hearing. to tell the court why he feels it was fair and reasonable and the court should accept it. And I was told in Department 17, we don't hold hearings on compromises of minors' claims. That's what I was told, and it was taken, and I strongly disputed it, but it was taken off calendar, so there was never any hearing on this.
Well, I thought, you know, I'm trying to put this all in place. I thought the original order to you was that he refused to approve the compromise, and he directed that there a reduction either the attorney's fees or the Medicaid lien before it was resubmitted. And rather than doing that, you filed a motion for extraordinary relief indicating special circumstances justify the original disposition of the proceeds.
And asked for a hearing on that. Yes.
Okay.
Well, so. No, he wanted the attorney. It was a pre-printed form that the department has. Apparently, they don't approve any minors' compromises in that department unless the attorney's fees and costs are less than what the minor is going to receive. That's why it was sent back. And I didn't think that was reasonable in this case. It didn't make any sense because there were like $48,000 in unreimbursed costs in this case. And these are hard costs. This is money out of my pocket for expert witnesses and for depositions. So that made no sense. So I asked for a hearing on it. That's what all we did. And this hearing was scheduled, and it wasn't taken off calendar until the day before the hearing. But we felt that we had a right to try to show that what we're asking for is fair and reasonable, and that the court's apparent policy that the amount paid to the minor has to be more than the attorney's fees and costs doesn't make any sense in a case that's highly cost intensive. Doesn't make any sense at all. So that was the purpose, but we didn't get a hearing, and that's one of the problems in this case. And then when the judge finally rendered his decision on a, you know, first he approved the settlement and the minors and the reduction of the Medicaid lien. We agreed with that. We've never disputed the settlement. The settlement should have been approved. The minors lien. I mean, the
Mr. Gellner, you're under 4 minutes in your time at this point.
Okay, it should have been reduced. That, we always agreed with that, but the problem was that the court in its decision.
Mr. Gellner, I'll say it again. If you continue to talk, Mr. Haley will not be allowed to at this point.
Oh, it's just four. It's four total. Oh, I'm sorry, Your Honor. I thought it was four of my ten.
No.
All right, I will let Mr. Haley proceed. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. Robert Simon on behalf of the respondent, the Honorable Judge Michael Villani of the 8th Judicial District Court. The issue here is whether or not NRS 41-200 gives the court discretion to determine attorney's fees. I don't believe there is a dispute that the actual compromise submitted to the judge was actually approved. The court's order, paragraph 12, I believe on page 7, clearly states that the compromise agreement is being accepted. In addition, the settlement agreement between the parties was conditioned upon the acceptance of the judge of the underlying compromise claim. So what we have here is we have the district court judge stating that $238,000 has been approved and is an appropriate amount based on the facts underlying the case. What the district court judge then did was exercise his discretion to determine how that money would be distributed and allotted to Ashley Himmel and her representatives. That is, there was a pot of cash provided by the defendants, and that pot was distributed to the defendant, to the state of Nevada through a lien, and through to the plaintiff. The judge then only exercised his discretion to determine what was allotted within that cluster of parties that was all representing Ashley Himmel. The problem here is that during the settlement negotiations in 2010, Mr. Gellner and Mr. Haley proceeded at that mediation to attempt to negotiate and argue for their own fees and costs. So they tried to include their own fees and costs into the agreement. Instead of attending that mediation solely for the benefit of Ashley, they attended that mediation for their own benefit to try to argue their own fees and costs. Now, that was all tied in together. There was no one in that room that was there for Ashley. Now, the purpose of NRS 41-200 was to provide, the purpose of that NRS 41-200 was to provide the district court an opportunity to review the actions of the guardian and the counsel for a minor and determine whether or not they were acting appropriately and whether they had reached a reasonable settlement agreement. There were two settlement agreements in this case. Both were reapportioned. One was for $50,000, one was for $238,000, creating a total of $288,000. Now, with those two settlements combined, Mr. Gallner and Mr. Haley are arguing that they want approximately $173,000 for themselves, approximately $35,000 for Ashley, and $79,000 for the state of Nevada to cover their costs. What the judge reapportioned was $107,000 for Mr. Haley and Mr. Gallner, $101,000 for Ashley, and $79,000 for the state. When they stated that Judge Guani had a fast, hard and fast rule that he would not award or apportion proceeds to a minor whereby the attorney was making more than the minor, that actually is not the outcome of this case, because between those two settlements, they did end up making $6,000 more than the minor child. What it comes down to is Mr. Gallner believes that he's entitled to all of his costs back. But everybody and nobody contests the fact that his claims and his client's claims were not likely to succeed at trial. This mediation, all parties accepted that fact, which is why there was a $238,000 settlement, and Medicaid, through the state of Nevada, took $79,000, 15% of its costs. Now, Mr. Gallner believes that he's entitled to 100% of his costs plus attorney's fees and costs. He does not accept the fact that he faced a risk by going to trial that he would not recover any of those costs. I believe the judge, through his order, clearly states repeatedly that he went through the factors of Brunzell and determined that the judges, the work done, the amount of work, the quality of work, and the results obtained determined that his award, his request of a total of $173,000, should be reduced to $107,000. If there are no questions.
Could I ask for some clarification on the first settlement?
Yes, sir.
The $43,000 plus that was reimbursed to Mr. Gellner from the first settlement, were those reimbursements of costs, payment of attorney's fees, or a combination of both?
They were a combination of both. Originally, attached as Exhibit 14 to the underlying writ is a request by Mr. Gallner that the entire $50,000 be turned over to him for costs. Uh-huh. Judge Bonaventure and Judge Silver reapportioned that request and turned it into $39,000 in costs, $4,000 in attorney's fees, and $6,000 to Ashley. So the requested petition in the case for the $50,000 was also reapportioned in the best interest of the minor.
Mr. Gellner makes the point that he wanted to have a hearing in front of the judge and explain both from his point of view as well as the settlement judge's point of view that there were extraordinary services provided by the lawyer in reducing a Medicare lien by over $400,000. That does seem to be an extraordinary accomplishment for the ward as well as the case.
That is.
I don't see that discussed or articulated in the order.
It's not, but at the same time, as I do believe that the judge focused on the fact that the mediator also felt that they were not likely to succeed at trial. And that fact, the fact that everyone would receive zeros if that case went to trial, stood to mitigate his risks associated with his contingency fee agreement and the fees that he stood to receive. Regarding the Medicaid lien, I believe that they decided to try to get 15% of their over $500,000 in costs because that they may not receive anything from the actual results of that trial.
Well, if I read the order, true. But that, of course, applies to the ward, too. I mean, the ward was at risk of getting zero also. And the ward received, in this case, the benefit of a substantial reduction in the Medicare lien and some money. Under the original settlement proposal, the allocation would have furnished the ward $6,000 from the original settlement and $25,000 from the settlement under consideration. So there was a benefit to the ward, to the child, of getting zero or, frankly, being exposed, maybe not realistically, but being exposed to the defense costs if the case had gone to trial and failed. Was that considered?
I do not believe it was considered, Your Honor.
And the other question I have is the order seems to be silent about Mr. Haley. I know that you made a comment, and I'm not sure you intended it
the way it came out, that no one was there for the child, but Mr. Haley was the guardian ad litem. You're not suggesting in that argument, I assume, that he was inappropriate in his conduct as guardian ad litem, are you?
I apologize to this court and Mr. Haley if it came out that way. What I was referencing was the fact that at a mediation, whereby you're representing a child, a minor child, the point of that mediation is not to negotiate your own attorney's fees and costs.
Right.
You're supposed to be there to represent the child.
Yeah.
Well, it's part of this order as well. It doesn't look like the judge apportioned anything. It looks like he lumped together Mr. Haley and Mr. Gilmer and their attorney's fees and costs together. Shouldn't that have been broken out specifically to be appropriately compliant with the statute?
I believe that might have been an option. I believe that the court did not do that. I believe that the court may have had a hearing and determined whether or not how it should be apportioned, the actual award to Mr.
That just kind of leaves it up to them to figure it out themselves.
Yes, it does, Your Honor.
Well, as between Mr. Gellner and Mr. Haley, a reasonable person reading the order could conclude that Mr. Haley's to receive no compensation. He's not seeking reimbursement for attorney's fees. He's seeking compensation as the guardian ad litem.
His fees could be interpreted as a cost of the estate, and it's the cost of Ashley Hemmel.
So should that come from the $95,000 allocated in the block trust account?
Yes, Your Honor. Well, I apologize. No, it should come part of the costs and fees for litigating the case. So it should come from the apportionment of the Judge Villani's order of the $95,000 to the two of them to distribute and to award the costs and negotiate their costs as they
say. So that would have been the $63,000, correct?
That would have been. There are a lot of numbers floating around.
I'm looking at his order,
okay,
indicating $79,333 went to the state of Nevada for the lien, $95,200 to be placed in the blocked account for the benefit of the minor, and $63,466 as in for attorney's fees and costs.
Yes.
Okay.
Could we ask counsel if you're able to stipulate, was the amount of unreimbursed costs after the first settlement $48,000?
I'm not able to say that. I do not know that fact. Ms. Mandelbaum was a party to the case, and she would know. She represented the defendants in that case. I apologize. And she would be able
perhaps you could consult.
Yes. Actually, if the court.
If more time is necessary. I just am interested in knowing what the unreimbursed costs were after the first settlement. And how much of the amount paid in the first settlement to Mr. Gellner was for fees and how much was for costs incurred?
If the court has no further questions for me, I'd turn over the last 5 minutes to Ms. Mandelbaum so she could address that concern and what work was completed after the May 2009 settlement agreement.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Good morning, Your Honors. Thank you. May it please the court, my name is Kim Mandelbaum. I'm representing both Dr. Orville and Pulmonary Associates now. I have a few points that I'd like to raise, and then I'd be happy to respond to any other questions that you might have. If I could go back, settlement number one with the parties, aside from mine, resulted in counsel receiving $43,733.99, or 87% of the settlement. Ashley received $6,266.01, or 13% of that settlement. As for remaining and outstanding costs at that time, I don't believe we've ever been provided with a detailed breakdown. What I can tell you is that at this point, Mr. Gellner is requesting that he be fully reimbursed for his experts. Well, as to my clients, he doesn't need an obstetrical expert or a nursing expert, and he wants those to be reimbursed. He needs only a pulmonary expert. The reality is that this case is an obstetrical malpractice case, and there never was any liability on the part of the pulmonary physician or his group. And that's why we settled the case. We wanted Ashley to get some money. Mr. Gellner stood up here and said to you, it makes no sense that the child would get more money than the lawyer. That comment makes no sense to me with all due respect. The child is the one who's injured. If he is going to stand up for the rights of his client, then he should want his client to have more money than he has. He should want his client's recovery to be maximized. He would want to do that in the best interest of the child, which is what Judge Villani did. If you look at settlement number two, counsel gets $63,466.67 of that, and Ashley gets $95,200. As my esteemed colleague pointed out, but I'll reiterate, counsel then yields from this case $107,200.66, and Ashley gets $101,466.01. She gets slightly less than her lawyer, and she's the one who's injured.
How did you get to the 107 again? I'm just bringing me back into that loop from the 60,000 that was...
I added the 43,733.99, which is what counsel got from settlement number one.
Okay.
To the 63,000 that Judge Villani gives him in the order.
Got it.
I don't think it's unreasonable.
I appreciate the point, Ms. Mandelbaum, but I'm not sure that it's appropriate or fair to say counsel got that much. Any claimant in a personal injury case is going to have to incur, through their counsel, costs to prosecute the case. Now, it may very well be that some of the costs that Mr. Gellner is claiming are not necessarily recoverable or appropriate in the context of the claims against your clients as the settling clients. But the correct comparison, at least from my point of view, is the amount of fees that Mr. Gellner got as opposed to the ward.
I understand, Your Honor.
And then perhaps the court would evaluate whether some of the costs are not reimbursable because they weren't necessary to the claims against your client.
Right. I know that...
And I don't know that that analysis was addressed by the court from the order. It doesn't seem like it was, but maybe you have some different insight on that.
Well, I would say this about Judge Villani's order. Even though it might not nicely go through, for instance, all the Brunzell factors one by one, I think reading it, it does seem clear that he did make the analyses that he needed to make.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't point out a lot of things that he probably could have, such as mistakes that were made by counsel, missing the deadline for filing the lawsuit, other things that were done that resulted in dismissal of most of the claims. And there's quite a bit of motion practice in front of Judge Villani in the underlying suit because we had a lot of dispositive motions that were filed, many of which were granted. And I think that Judge Villani was taking that into account when he was making his order. Thank you very much for allowing me to speak.
Mr. Haley?
The first misconception I would like to correct is Deputy Attorney General's statement that we appeared at that mediation to represent our own interests. That is absolutely not true. I was appointed as a guardian ad litem, not as an attorney, as a guardian ad litem in January in family court and in February district court.
Mr. Haley, if that's a correct position, then should any award to you come out of attorney's fees or should it come out of cost?
Well, what I believe is this. The settlement was fair and just.
Respond to my question, please, because that's a salient point going off what Justice Hardesty brought up. Where should that come out of to give us some handle
of
how...
Mr. Gale's entitled reimbursement of his cost. In my estimation, $41,200 doesn't give the judge any discretion once he approves the settlement. All it does is give him discretion to decide those monies that belong to the guardian ad litem or to the guardian ad litem. He decides how that should be distributed, and it is all that statute says. It doesn't give him unfair discretion to change the...
So if we found that he erred... in some way, and this is sent back, and he chooses not to accept the compromise, then it goes forward.
Perhaps. I don't know what might happen. Point being, I don't, frankly, I don't trust this judge to make a considered decision. When he denied me the hearing, so I could explain to him what happened, he basically affected a Fifth Amendment taking because he gave me nothing. I had a contractual right to these, as did Mr. Geller. He didn't give us a hearing at all.
You mean as to your costs? But yeah. Would you concede that in the second settlement, your client, or the one you were to be looking out for her best interests, fared much better?
Yes, yes, he did.
But and isn't that part of your responsibility and your obligation is to make sure that
absolutely
the one you're looking after fares well?
What about the uncertainty he now creates? What about the fact he did not consider the fact that she benefited $433,000 by virtue of the Medicaid lien? I was astounded that Mr. Geller was able to negotiate that for 16%. Absolutely astounded. They could have gobbled up the entire amount. It was I was ready to go forward. It was Mr. Bell that convinced me. I used to work for Stu Bell, candid with you, and he told me, you guys are all good lawyers, but you know, these are doctors, defense lawyers are good. You may not win this case. So we made it to the best settlement we could possibly make. Now, we have a settlement which everybody accepted, 150 years of experience by the accumulated lawyers, including Stu Bell. And this judge decided he didn't like it for whatever reason. We don't really know why, and I'm entitled to know why. The statute says I'm entitled to know why. Well, I don't know why. And I don't like the fact that it appears from a cold examination record that I didn't do my job. I went to see Ashley on a regular basis. I created a rapport with the parents. I was in this case 6 months when they adopted her. I asked Bill and Judy, you want me to step out? You're the parents now. No, no. You're doing a wonderful job. We want you in. I got to know this child as much as you can. She can't talk. She can't walk. She can't communicate. She can't do anything. It shows me going to raise five daughters. I know about children.
Mr. Haley, your time's up, but would you summarize what your position is?
My position is that you just that the honor the agreement is the well-considered, reasoned agreement that we made. Ashley doesn't have benefits since of what I negotiated her since July 2010 and still sitting there. She needs a new wheelchair. She needs all kinds of amenities. This whole thing is just sitting in limbo. She's not going to last forever. She is, in effect, on her deathbed now. Because the bed she's in is going to be her deathbed. I just think you should have granted and enforced the agreement as we agreed to, and it's over.
And just specifically, in the order, it doesn't appear that your guardian ad litem, you never did quite answer the question as to where you think your fees ought to come from, costs or attorney's fees.
Out of Mr. Geller's portion, I'm actually a little confused about that.
Right. Well, I think we are as well, and part of the order does not account for your compensation. So
that, of course, is the problem.
Exactly. What do you think should be done as far as this order is concerned to allow for your compensation?
I think you're not going to like this answer. I think the amount awarded to Ashley needs to be reduced because there's a danger created now. We have this settlement with...
Well, the order indicates that perhaps your compensation ought to come out of the $63,000 that he awarded for costs and attorney's fees.
It's absurd. Mr. Geller would receive nothing for his work? That would be the opposite effect of that. He'd be reimbursed for his costs. I would get fees for being guardian ad litem, and he did the bulk of the work, and he gets nothing. It's hardly fair. Something else is created here. This is the 600-pound gorilla in the room. If this goes forward, what is Medicaid going to do? Are they going to say, well, now, Ashley, you have this extra...
Mr. Haley,
that's a risk.
Mr. Haley, I'm going to cut you off at this point. I mean, we're very well aware that possibly a special needs trust should have been created, but that's not before the court at this point. What we're looking at is the propriety of the order that was issued and whether or not we should grant the writ that's been brought. With that, this matter will stand submitted.